KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS Falls Pass.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. In their drive to eliminate programs they deem race exclusionary, the Trump administration is stamping out Native scholarships, academic programs, and staff at institutions of higher learning. Native education advocates worry the actions are doing away with decades of progress to help Native students succeed. We'll get updates on what is happening at colleges and universities and how education advocates are responding. That's coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Final okay is stalled in Congress on a bill setting up the Truth and Healing Commission for Indian Boarding School Policies. This week, a tribal leader in Wisconsin asked state legislators for help in getting that measure passed. Chuck Kornbach of station WUWM reports.
The bipartisan legislation would establish a federal commission to investigate the U.S. government's role in Indian boarding school systems, an era that began during the 1800s. The measure would also lead to more research into the school's effect on Native American communities and help identify pathways to healing from the cultural genocide critics of the schools say the institutions were designed to commit. Late last year, the U.S. Senate passed the measure, but the House of Representatives has yet to do so. During an annual State of Wisconsin Tribes speech to the Wisconsin legislature, St. Croix Chippewa Indians of Wisconsin Chairman Thomas Fowler spoke about the topic. He urged the Republican-controlled state body to encourage the GOP-controlled House to act on the bill, calling it critical for Native communities.
The tragedy of boarding schools requires remembrance so that the spirits of our ancestors are not lost or forgotten. We have a duty to afford them dignity and respect, to address the loss they suffered, oftentimes while being alone.
Fowler says he's not trying to criticize all of today's non-Indian politicians for what happened in the past.
I recognize that not all the people in this room are responsible for those detrimental past policies, but each of us have an opportunity and, quite frankly, an obligation to ensure that history never repeats itself.
The U.S. Catholic bishops have wanted representation on the Boarding Schools Commission. The bishops say that healing and reconciliation are only possible if all parties are involved. St. Croix Chairman Fowler also called on the Wisconsin legislature to support additional state policies expanding Native American education and legalizing medical marijuana. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
Alaska experts on energy, housing, and infrastructure say billions of dollars in limbo from President Trump's federal funding freezes are affecting local projects like heat pump distribution and building infrastructure to protect against storm surges and tsunamis. Representatives from Alaska-based organizations held a joint press conference last week. They said more than $5 billion are at risk from the bipartisan infrastructure law and over $720 million from the Inflation Reduction Act. Those numbers are a moving target, given some programs have been frozen and unfrozen irregularly. Tashina Duddle works at Deerstone Consulting, which supports tribal energy infrastructure projects across Alaska. She says many grants that are now frozen were for projects to prevent shore erosion and stabilize villages against permafrost melt and flooding. One program through the Bureau of Indian Affairs supports tribally led climate adaptation. It's allocated $72 million in funding for nearly 40 Alaskan tribal projects, but is now on pause.
Without this funding, villages will be lost to erosion, infrastructure will collapse under worsening climate conditions, communities will have to relocate without a plan, without resources, and without dignity.
Duddle adds that the projects also create crucial economic opportunities in rural communities, like construction jobs. Agencies are unsure what projects will be able to move forward and what spending will be reimbursed. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at AARP.org.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Support by Siri, with a diverse and strategic investment portfolio for the long-term benefit of their shareholders. Investing in energy, infrastructure, real estate, government services, and more. Information is available at CIRI.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, hosting today's show live from the studios of KNBA Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Colleges and universities are moving fast to accommodate demands by the Donald Trump administration to eliminate programs and policies that specifically promote and support Native Americans and other students of color. If they don't, they risk losing federal money, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars for research and other academic work. Right now, Columbia University is reeling from the termination of $400 million in medical research grants over what the administration says is anti-Semitism by allowing pro-Palestinian protests on campus. Today on our show, we'll talk with Native higher education advocates about uncertainties that lie ahead for Native students. You can join us with comments or questions by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-996-2848. You can also leave a comment on our website or social media pages. Joining us now from Denver, Colorado, is Dr. Cheryl Crazy Bull. She is president and CEO of the American Indian College Fund. She is Sichanju Lakota. Cheryl, hello, and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Thank you, Sean. I'm glad to join you today.
It's a pleasure to have you, Cheryl. Joining us from Alexandria, Virginia, is Carrie Billy. She is an education consultant and the former president and CEO of the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. She is Dene. Carrie, hello, and welcome back to you as well.
Yate. Thank you for allowing me to be here, and thank you for elevating these important issues that are so critical to our future.
Absolutely. Our third guest joins us from Gallup, New Mexico, Zani Gorman. She is a historian and the daughter of Dr. Carl Gorman, one of the original Navajo Code Talkers. She earned a PhD last May from the University of New Mexico. Zani, hello and welcome to Native America Calling. It's a pleasure to have you along with our other guests.
Hello. Yate, thank you for having me here.
I want to begin the conversation with Cheryl Crazy Bull. And Cheryl, the American Indian College Fund published a response to the U.S. Department of Education's letter to colleges and universities. That letter put educators on notice to end what the Trump administration is calling radical indoctrination. Tell us more. What is the College Fund's position on what the Trump executive orders demand?
Other national Native organizations, our tribal nations, and our allies, demanding that recognition be given to the treaty and trust obligations of the federal government. So that's first and foremost for us, is that recognition, which, you know, needs to be upheld, not just at the federal level, but with states and higher education institutions. But we also urge our partners not to do early or compliance, not to comply with these directives, which are illegal and don't have any foundation under law. So that's one of the primary areas that we're focused on in response to that.
Can you tell us more about what specific initiatives or programs or policies are being eliminated?
Yeah, so it varies significantly. So I'll just speak generally. So for students, being able to participate with scholarships of like those provided by the American Indian College Fund, these are not race-based scholarships. These are scholarships that are given to students who are citizens of tribal nations. So that distinction is real important as we're dealing with scholarships. At the federal level, we're seeing, you know, pausing or elimination of programs that have terminology in them that the Trump administration is interpreting as providing some kind of favoritism to a particular population. So again, those kinds of programs that are based in using the language like equity, those are not programs that are intended not just for Native students. They're not intended to give preference. They're intended to create a more equitable playing field. So we think that's really important. And then in higher education, we're seeing a pullback of the more visible kinds of things like Native graduation convocations or graduation celebrations, but we anticipate that there will be efforts on the part of institutions of higher education to eliminate Native student programs, maybe Native centers, maybe Native studies degrees. And so we're also saying to students, you know what, you finish your education. You turn away from that behavior of those organizations and institutions and get your education and let us help you with that fight.
Cheryl, what's the risk for colleges that try to get around these Trump administration orders?
Yeah, I think the risk is what you're seeing already with, what you just mentioned earlier about what happened at Columbia. The risk is that these institutions do lose federal funding. Again, restating that is in fact not legal, and lawsuits, we believe, will prove that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's no secret Native Americans have struggled with underrepresentation in higher education for a long time. Do we know whether the strategies of what educators and administrators have done up to this point to improve Native student success? Do we have the data to show that it's worked so far and we've gotten success?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah,
we do have the data to show that. You know, we've seen an increased graduation rate among students, increased persistence. I think that's really important. We have seen a decline in the number of Native students going to college. So the kinds of barriers that students experience, financial barriers in particular, those continue to be a challenge, but we have seen that improvement. And about 25% of Native students either attend a tribal college or they attend a Native-serving non-tribal institution. So there's a significant number of students that are in environments where their cultural identity is upheld, is respected, and is integrated into the work of the institution. So I think that's also a very positive impact.
So what are your thoughts then in terms of how these new anti-DEI efforts will impact Native higher education participation? Do you think we're going to see a significant drop here if this continues?
I hope not. I think our goal is to help students figure out their pathway to college and then support them in college. So all of the Native scholarship providers have increased their investment in, you know, helping students identify and get into college, and then helping students while they're in college by providing them with career education and coaching support. So I'm hopeful that those efforts will continue to support students so more of them will choose a post-secondary pathway. You know, we don't think that getting a higher education is optional. We think that it's critical to the survival of our tribal nation. So we're going to put every resource that we have into helping students find that path for themselves.
Let's talk more about grants. Cheryl, ProPublica reported that the USDA suspended $7 million in grants to tribal colleges. Tell us more in terms of what those grants would accomplish, and what's the risk here going forward that we won't see more grants being compromised in the future?
Yeah, well, first I want to say that is a risk, that more grants will be compromised in the future as this current administration examines the purposes and the intentions of grants and interprets those purposes and intentions negatively or detrimentally instead of positively. The USDA grants that ProPublica discusses were part of a program that is titled an educational equity. And so we actually think that the title of the program is what activated the response of the federal government to pause that program. It impacts student participation in higher education. Students get internships, research projects, scholarships through those programs. It impacts faculty who are paid by those programs. And I think most importantly, it impacts the relationship between the college and the community because land grant programs build community natural resources and land use strategies. So I think it has a real far-ranging impact, and we have to watch all of our programs, all of the grants, which is one of the, it's very early in this process, but it's one of the big stressors that we're experiencing. What you were saying earlier, just trying to keep track is, you know, one of the challenges all the Native organizations are dealing with, including the educational orgs.
Cheryl, tribal colleges receive about 74% of their total revenue from federal funding. Where does that other 26% come from? And is there a way that tribal colleges could perhaps increase those revenues coming outside of the federal government?
Yeah, so those additional revenues come from a variety of sources. Could be tribal support, could be or is likely to be tuition and fees, could be grants from foundations, could be grants from the college fund. So I think that, you know, those are the kinds of sources. Developing those revenue streams is a real challenge for the tribal colleges because they work in environments that are already economically distressed. So tribal colleges are very affordable, and for them to consider increasing the cost of education for their community, you know, doesn't feel viable to them. We do need more philanthropic support. So I'm really glad you brought this topic up. We need more money from philanthropy, not to just fill a gap that might be emerging, but also to make up for the fact that less than 0.5% of philanthropic dollars in the United States go to Native-led organizations.
All right, Dr. Cheryl Crazy Bull kicking off the conversation here at Native America Calling. Chickasaw citizen Pearl Carter Scott was a trailblazing politician and pilot whose career spanned much of the 20th century. Susan LaFleche Peacott was a pioneering medical doctor at a time when women couldn't even vote and Native Americans were not considered citizens. We'll recognize some of the groundbreaking Native women throughout history on the next Native America Calling.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
There's mean things happening in this world. There's mean things happening in this world. There's mean things happening. There's mean things happening. Nah, 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 nah. There's mean things happening. Nah.
Thanks for listening today to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce in Anchorage, Alaska. We're getting updates on how recent Trump administration actions impact Native college students. Trump is rapidly undoing college scholarships, recruiting, student support, and academic programs that have a proven track record of improving student participation in higher education. If you are a student, if you are an educator, or you are just a concerned Native American person in your community, join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-996-2848. We've got the phone lines open, folks, so we're waiting for your call. Join us. Let's hear now from Carrie Billy with, she's an education consultant and former president and CEO of the American Indian Higher Education Consortium. And Carrie, we just got done talking with Dr. Cheryl Crazy Bull about these recent executive actions. What are you seeing at tribal colleges and universities that you work with?
Well, I think basically what Cheryl said, the colleges are experiencing a lot of fear. The programs will be cut, and trying to prepare as best they can to deal with potential cuts, anything that may be coming, and also to strengthen their students, to provide support for their students. I mean, a lot of students at tribal colleges are suffering generational historical trauma already, and then you put this immediate trauma of not even knowing if their Pell Grant's going to come through or if they're going to have teachers, which some of the colleges, your SIPPY and Haskell, are already facing, that students are losing their professors, so they can't take a course they need to graduate. And I'm trying to help students deal with these issues are something that tribal colleges have to deal with every day.
Now,
and
you
also
were
comply with all these flurries of conflicting regulations and rules that keep coming down.
Right. Yeah, the pace, it's just mind-numbing how quickly this stuff is coming out. Carrie, you were president at AHEC for more than two decades. During that tenure, did you ever face uncertainty to the funding of tribal colleges and universities, or if so, to the extent that we're seeing now?
Well, just to clarify, I was with AHEC for more than two decades. I was president for about 15 years. So in those 15 years, you know, we lived through the first Trump administration, which we thought was going to be bad, and it was scary in the beginning, but we learned to navigate that relationship, that four-year relationship, and tribal colleges came out stronger. I think that's probably the closest that I have to the kind of thing that tribal colleges are experiencing now. And like I said, that had a good outcome. So we're hopeful for the future, but really constantly preparing for as best we can for the unknown.
Now, we heard Cheryl earlier talk about the importance of increasing philanthropic efforts there with tribal colleges, other universities that, you know, have large numbers of Native American students. What's your thought, and what are other Native education advocates thinking about in terms of securing a financial future for these schools that we're talking about today?
Well, a couple things. First, I want to say, just when you began this segment, you mentioned that the tribal colleges and American Indians and Alaska Natives in higher education have seen decades of progress. We have seen decades of progress, but we're trying to overcome centuries of oppression. And that's why these proposed cuts are so significant, because we still have so far to go just to get on the playing field, much less be on a level playing field. So there's a lot that has to be done. And one of the first things that I think we could do is use this moment as a teachable moment. We need more funding from philanthropy. We need additional funding sources, but we also have to hold the federal government responsibility to its treaty obligations, its trust responsibility, and the exchange of over 1 billion acres of land. We have to hold the federal government accountable to the programs that exist and to the programs that should exist.
And it's interesting that accountability, it is based on us as Native people being a political class as opposed to a racial one. And
right.
I'm always curious. I mean, because when I look in the mirror, I don't know about you, Carrie. When I look in the mirror, I don't see a political class. I see my face, and I see what I know to be as my native life experience. How do you think that's resonating not only amongst us as Native people, really understanding our role as a political class, but these other people, non-Natives, who are so heavily involved in these decisions that are impacting our students and our schools?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one that was a constant frustration for me when I was at AHEC trying to educate Congress and the administration, whatever the administration was and whoever was in Congress, and also our partners in higher education and in philanthropy, we'd have to spend half of our time, you know, the limited amount of time we had, we'd have to spend half or more of it just explaining what treaty obligation, trust responsibility, the exchange of land is, explain that history before we even got to our request. And so probably one of the most frustrating things to me is I see that we have made that progress in the last decade or so, really excellent progress in dealing with the invisibility of American Indians and Alaska Natives. And now we're kind of going back to square one with that process that we have to go through of education. But it's something that we have to do. We have to be committed to it. We can't ever give up. And I think, like I said, I think this is a teachable moment. We have to use every opportunity we can, every resource we have, students, teachers, faculty members, presidents, everyone, educating this administration and all of our partners about that treaty obligation and trust responsibility.
Now, we mentioned earlier that tribal colleges get the majority of their funding from the Bureau of Indian Education, but we're also seeing the Department of Education and a dismantling there. What possible effects do you see with regard to DOE in how these tribal colleges are able to operate?
Oh, right. Tribal colleges get a large portion of their funding from the Bureau of Indian Education at the Department of Interior, but they also get very important funding from the Department of Education, and also just across the board, other federal agencies. They get, I think, from the Department of Ed, well, there's the funding that goes to the institutions themselves, to the tribal colleges, but most important is Pell Grant funding, the funding that goes to each tribal college student, or almost probably 70% or more of tribal college students receive Pell Grant funding. So that's critically important. And as Cheryl mentioned, that financial security is absolutely essential to tribal college students. So cutting the Department of Education, Trump can't eliminate the Department of Education, but he can, by gutting its core and firing all the good people who work there, really impact programs and students, families and teachers. And so we may end up with the same kind of result, and eliminating Pell Grants or cutting Pell Grants is going to be disastrous for students, our students who are so dependent. Even a one semester delay, as I mentioned, that could impact a student's ability to graduate on time, to finish a program. So that's really essential. But it's not just, it's looking ahead to students who are going to become students at tribal colleges or within any institution of higher education. You know, 92% of Native students attend public schools, and they receive formula funding. That funding is jeopardized, especially if it goes directly to the states. The Federal Department of Education holds states accountable to serve Native students. Who's going to be holding them accountable? States don't have a trust responsibility. The federal government does. The Department of Education does. You know, there's the ESSA Title III, Title VI, the Native Language Services and services to Native students, the Office of Civil Rights. There's just, it's like a domino effect of potential cuts to Department of Education.
All right. I want to go back to Cheryl Crazy Bull to also chime in here with regard to elimination of hundreds of jobs at the Department of Education, because Cheryl, some of these jobs are actually folks who work on civil rights discrimination complaints. So do you have any idea about how those discrimination complaints could be handled in the future there at DOE?
Yeah, thank you. I'm not, and I don't think other Native educators or people who work with civil rights issues, we are not optimistic that those cases will go forward. We know that civil rights violations that involve Native students can take years to be resolved. And then when there is an order of some kind that requires oftentimes K-12 education to come into compliance, there has to be monitoring of that. So we don't have that expectation. You know, the Dear Colleague letter came from the Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education, the one that directed institutions to eliminate their DEI initiatives. The most recent statement from the Department of Education Civil Rights Office about the investigations that they're launching against institutions of higher education, you know, that came from there as well. So, you know, the expectation is really that we're going to see attacks on civil rights rather than efforts to resolve civil rights violations.
All right. Carrie, back to you. We talked about this earlier, but you and Cheryl both have worked now through two Trump administrations, but Carrie, what's different now? What are you seeing specifically that's different than what you saw 8 years ago? And to what extent and how much further is this going to go? I mean, it seems like every day there's a new shoe to fall and everybody's kind of on pins and needles. Where are we going here? Where's this going to end up?
Yeah, gee, I wish I knew. What's different about this is that it's so rapid fire. It's so across the board devastation. I think in the previous administration, things were done thoughtfully. There were some good things that came out of the first Trump administration. Regulatory control, the regulations went significantly down and were very streamlined, so much easier to participate in federal programs. That was actually an outcome. And now we're seeing the elimination of those programs. So, he's trying to eliminate the Department of Education. I think the Secretary McMahon said this is their final mission, to completely eliminate the Department of Education. That has profound repercussions. But as I mentioned, the tribal colleges have programs across all federal agencies, not just Interior or Education, but all federal agencies. So all of those programs are at risk. The basic civil, human, constitutional rights of students is at risk.
Right. And this would be a good time for anyone who's listening to the show right now. If you are a student, maybe you are at a tribal college or at another university, but this is impacting you. You're concerned about whether or not your education is going to be able to continue as it has in the past. Give us a call. We'd really like to hear your input. 1-800-996-2848. There are dozens of tribal colleges across the country, and many of them are located in communities that air this show. So join the conversation, 1-800-996-2848. And Carrie, let me ask you, what are you hearing from students, from people actually going to these schools? They've got their boots on the ground. What are their biggest concerns? What are their fears?
Well, students are afraid of the loss of opportunity, the fact that they may not be able to take the courses that they need to take to graduate, which I think I mentioned earlier. They're afraid of that, but they're also afraid of the threats to their identity, to their ability to speak their language, to learn their language, to continue to thrive and to succeed and graduate. They're afraid of, like you said earlier, looking in the mirror and seeing that they're a different color from other people. And what does that mean to them as a human being? So I think they really are feeling that their identity is threatened, and their diversity, their ability to contribute, to create new knowledge, is at risk.
All right. Cheryl, I want to bring you back in. This argument that we're talking about today and is at the core of all of these political upheavals and whatnot, Native Americans being a political class and not a racial one, do you think that's resonating with the people in the Trump administration who are making decisions right now?
I think that, just like what Carrie shared, this is an educational opportunity. I do not think that the majority of people in the current administration have any, you know, real knowledge about the history of the United States with tribes. So we do feel like there's an opportunity there to educate people, and in that education, help them to understand the value of living up to their commitment. I also think, though, that just broadly, although we have a political identity, I want to, you know, speak to what Carrie said, that our diversity, the contributions that we can make, that resonates across all kinds of diversity. And so I think it's really, you know, we want to distinguish ourselves because we're looking to protect our, you know, treaty and trust relationship. We want to take care of our people. But we also have to recognize that these attacks on equity and inclusion, they're widespread. And I think they're very organized. They're very intentional attacks. I think that, from my perspective, is the difference from the last Trump administration, is the not only the how sweeping they are, but how intentional they are. And then I want to also follow up on Carrie's comment about students being concerned about the lack of opportunity. We heard from students that they had envisioned themselves as public servants. So they saw themselves entering into federal employment so that they could work in areas that impact our communities, like being an environmental scientist with the EPA or working for the Park Service. Or students saw that as a path and have told us they no longer think that is a path. And so they're frustrated and they're hurt. They're trying to figure out what is the path going to be now for them if that trajectory has been taken away.
Right. That's a really good point. And some of these programs, some of these educational programs, I'm thinking specifically like at Haskell and SIPPY, they're designed, they're almost like a pipeline to get students into some of these federal jobs. And now that's all in jeopardy.
That's absolutely true. We're seeing that there. We're seeing that with educational pathways. Do you want to become a teacher? You know, a lot of what the Department of Education supports is teacher education. If you want to become somebody who is in a health career, you know, a lot of the HHS programs that provide public education support, I mean, it just has this real sweeping impact on student access, which impacts their families. It impacts this need for generational wealth. It impacts their career trajectory. So we have a lot of work to do. And we really hope, you know, that our communities, you know, continue to fight and join with us in this fight and continue to work across with all the other Native organizations and our allies who have to step in there with us and help protect the resources and create more resources.
We're going to take another short break. We will return and continue our conversation, and we're going to be speaking with Zani Gorman, historian and daughter of Dr. Carl Gorman, one of the original Navajo Code Talkers. So I encourage listeners to join our conversation. If you are a student, if you are a former student, or maybe you are concerned now with some of these recent events regarding the Navajo Code Talkers that we're going to talk about here in a moment, give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Native Forward Scholars Fund scholarships are open now. Native Forward supports Native students' higher education journeys, offering over 40 scholarship opportunities, programs, and resources designed for Native students. Info and applications at nativeforward.org, who support this show.
If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, it's important to act fast and start hands-only CPR. Call for emergency medical help and an AED. Push hard and fast in the center of the chest, giving 100 to 120 compressions per minute until help arrives. Learn more from the American Heart Association about the life-saving skill of CPR at heart.org/nation. The American Heart Association supports this show.
Did you know that one person can save up to 8 lives and heal dozens more through the gift of organ and tissue donation? Give hope to thousands of people across the U.S. waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. Learn more about the power of organ, eye, and tissue donation with Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization serving all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org. Support for this program provided by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, the business, the tribes, and the communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein. Online at lbblawyers.com. Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
We're glad you're listening today to Native America Calling. Will President Trump's efforts to root out diversity and equity programs in colleges improve the nation's academic achievement? Or does it install barriers to Native Americans and other people of color? That's the question to consider, and we would sure like for you to comment. Let us know by calling 1-800-996-2848. Zani Gorman joins us now from Gallup, New Mexico. Zani, we mentioned before the break that you are a historian and your father was an original Navajo code talker. And the reason this conversation is especially relevant right now is this week we learned that references to code talkers were removed from military websites. What's the message that it sends, Zani?
It's a very sad message. You know, the Navajo Code Talker story, it's our story. It's a Diné story, but it's also a story that resonates on so many levels. It's a Marine Corps story. People are attracted to it because it's a World War II story. It's an American story. So, you know, everybody kind of has a piece of this story. And on one hand, that's a good thing because for me as a historian and as a public historian for over 30 years, I've lectured on the Code Talkers. And, you know, it's a good thing because it draws people to a story that I utilize to help educate. So I talk about the federal boarding schools. These were men who in the early part of the 20th century, many of them were born right around the 1920s, right? And, you know, the blanket citizenship in 1924. So some of these men, including my father, who was the oldest member of, as we know, the Navajo Code Talkers, the first group, he was born in 1907. So many of these men were not even considered citizens of the United States when they were born. So there's all of these historical lessons in their story that I utilize to help, you know, educate people about Native people.
Mm-hmm. Zani, a Department of Defense spokesman initially attributed the deletions to complying with the president's orders to eliminate all diversity measures. How does that sit with you?
I'm sorry, say that again.
There was a spokesman that said the deletions were with regard to complying with these presidential orders to eliminate all diversity measures. And I'm just curious to hear how that sits with you.
Well, it doesn't sit well, obviously. I read over the order, and when the Code Talkers story was taken down and articles first started appearing, you know, I went immediately to the Marine Corps site, and the Marine Corps did not take down as many sites. They were very strategic about how they read that order. And as I read it, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but as a historian, you know, the wording is there's it's open for interpretation. And I think this is a perfect example of how the DOD on their website, the U.S. Army, the Navy and the Marine Corps all handled it very differently. The U.S. Army took down a lot of sites, a lot of information, scrubbed their sites pretty clean, as well as the DOD. The Marine Corps and the Navy, however, were more strategic about what they took down. And so, you know, I think this is something, a case in point that we should all be looking at is, you know, what is happening in the larger picture of attempting to erase history, to silence people, that, different agencies are having to deal with this in various ways. And as we've just been talking, you know, with Cheryl and Carrie sharing information about higher education, you know, it's affecting all of us on so many levels and very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Zani, now there are indications from the Pentagon that these deletions were a mistake. What's your thought there? And does that make up for what's already been done?
No, it of course does not make up for it. Like I said, I think the case in point here is that some people immediately responded to this and then had to backtrack, whereas others were more conscious of what was happening in the larger realm of this whole attempt of erasure. And I think, this is a good example of everybody is responding in various ways because we've never had to deal with this in our lifetimes.
Let's go to the phones. We have Leo listening on WOJB in Wisconsin. Hi, Leo. You are on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello. How you doing today? Yeah, thanks. Thanks for taking my message. I think that this here Trump administration is trying to do away with educated, healthy future taxpayers. They are making it so hard and trying to eliminate so many different things that America has put up and stood for all these years. And now they're trying to eliminate all this stuff and make it individually hard for any person to be educated, healthy, and future taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm trying to say here? They really are. They're trying to put everything together under one big room, one big committee, and everybody's going to have to goose step behind them, and I don't like it.
What do you think the goal is there with the Trump administration, Leo? What do you think their end game is here?
Total dictatorship. Mm. They're trying to make it where educated people ask questions. Educated people demand answers, and they don't want to deal with any of it. They want all that to be protest. Oh, you're getting arrested. You're saying something bad about us on TV. You're going to be arrested. And that's the way they're heading. And that's, I don't know. It's just everybody's got to get together and talk and discuss. And nobody can have a discussion with Trump if he's just rubber stamping and yelling and screaming and pointing fingers.
Leo, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate you joining the conversation. We have the phone lines open for anyone else who would like to call in. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Our next caller on the line, Chanupa in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, listening on Keeley Radio. Hello, big brother. Thank you for calling in as well.
Hey, Sean, I want to thank you, and I want to say something to those elders and all the co-talkers, okay? We can always do it for our elders because a lot of them don't do that anymore. And I was talking to one of the guys on the Pine Ridge Reservation here. I just came from Keeley. But anyway, what he was saying that a lot of us don't get recognition from it because of, past and present, conscious, things that happen, okay? But I said, like my Grandpa Roy and my dad was in the conflict. He was, my dad was. My dad did that. And so that's why I always do for all the vets. I do all of that. So you vets, from Lakota country.
Wopalatanka Chanupa, big brother, calling in from Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Phone lines are still open. We have time to take another call or two. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Zani, I want to go back to you because earlier you talked a little bit about what you see as an erasure of Native history. And I think as a historian, you have a really unique perspective to talk about that. And again, today it's the Navajo Code Talkers that we're talking about. But what do you see in terms of just the overall larger framework of how history is going to be taught in our schools going forward?
Well, we've always had to fight erasure, right? It's it's either a complete erasure or it's telling our stories in very stereotypical fashions, you know, whether it's in history books that don't include us, to Hollywood movies that, you know, make us so stereotyped that it's crazy, you know. So this, however, is a systematic attempt. And as, you know, as a historian of World War II, it's very unsettling to see what is happening in this country, because it very much mimics what was happening in World War II and in Germany, mm-hmm. and then eventually, you know, worldwide. And, you know, I encourage people, you know, they say, and some historians will say it's a cliche, but I believe it's very true, because we as Indian people, we see history not as a timeline, but we see it as a spiral, as a circle that is always constantly moving upward. And so you do repeat history, but you repeat it at a different level. And so, you know, people who are beginning to see these similarities need to look into it, educate yourself, you know, read books, read what you can find, and you know, make these comparisons, because they are things that, you know, and as the gentleman was just saying, you know, they're trying to eradicate educated people. During the Nazi regime, that was one of the first places they targeted, was education and higher learning. They fired teachers. They even went so far as to, you know, kill teachers, professors that, you know, said too much. So, you know, these are very important things that we all need to be paying attention to.
Let's take another caller. This is Alex listening in Albuquerque, New Mexico on KUNM. Hi, Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, Sean. Thanks again for your great work. Yes, I'm calling as an educator. I'm a teacher, so the last commenter resonated with my thoughts. Also, as a dad to a Native young woman. And I just wanted to say that, you know, the folks that are in power now are uncompromising. They're ideological descendants of the first people that came here from Europe and took the land by force and thought that was okay. And these are the treaty breakers. These are all the folks that think all of that is okay. So we really need to band together and not pretend that that's not who we're dealing with.
Alex, are you you said you're an educator. Are you a classroom teacher?
Yes, sir. I teach social studies down in the South Valley.
Okay, what are you telling your students right now?
I tell them that they need to be aware of what's going on. You know, we actually just went through the separation of powers. And, you know, if it were a movie, it would be a great time to have it happen. But since it's reality, it's scary. But it's a demonstration of the checks and balances being destroyed and collapsed, with giving them the hope that, you know, through the political system, through voting, they're not old enough to vote yet, but they will be soon, they can make a difference. But they really need to get informed and be able to analyze things critically. I spend a lot of time on critical thinking and analysis. And so on one hand, it's great. On the other hand, it's terrible, you know.
Mm-hmm. Alex, appreciate you calling in and joining the conversation. Zani, back to you. And again, this conversation keeps going back to students and specifically Native students. And I want to congratulate you again on your PhD that you earned last May. And what advice do you have for Native students who are pursuing a college degree right now?
Yeah, thank you, first of all. You know, I kind of took a very long trajectory to get where I am. I was a single parent. I have three sons, and I started going back to school when they were 3 and 5, and I did my undergrad work down at U of A, and then I decided to take a quote-unquote a few years off, came back home to the Riz, and my father was pushing 60 when he had me, so, you know, he was in his 80s by that point, and he was beginning to have health problems. So I decided to, you know, stay home and help and work. And so that few years that I planned to take off turned into 17 years. And then when my three sons graduated from high school, they all flew the coop the same the same year. One went down to U of A, up to Fort Lewis College, and over to UNM. all in 1 week. And so it was like, okay, it was just me and my cat. And I thought, you know what, I want to go back to school. So I applied and got into UNM, into the history department. And it was a long journey. I was not expecting it to take me 14 years, but it did. And so if there's anything I've learned, it's tenacity. Stick with your choice. I'm 61 years old. I graduated at the age of 61 with my PhD. It took me a long time. And my biggest advice that I give younger folks is, stick with it. If you're in school, stick with it and don't take those few years off if you can help it.
Okay.
Just plow forward and keep going.
Okay, I got one more question, and we're going to have to wrap up the show in about a minute. I shared with you before the show started that my grandmother was a classmate of your father's at the Albuquerque Indian School back in the 1920s. What do you think your dad would say right now if he could talk on these issues?
Oh, my God. I've been thinking about that for the last several days and praying about it. And I just imagine my dad putting his head down and shaking his head. I think he would be just as speechless as many of us are right now about what's happening. I have not been able to come up with an answer for that question.
Zani, thank you so much for joining the show today. Really appreciate your time along with Cheryl Crazy Bull and Carrie Billy. And of course, our last guest who just joined us, Zani Gorman, full name. And the callers who joined the conversation as well. Really appreciate you folks joining the conversation, picking up that phone and calling us. We'll be broadcasting all week for the remainder of the week here in Anchorage, Alaska. And we'd like to get some Alaska calls going as well later this week. So again, continue to engage with us here at Native America Calling. We will be back tomorrow recognizing Women's History Month with a look at Native women who made positive changes throughout history. I'm Sean Spruce. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org. See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support by AARP. If someone asks you to buy gift cards to pay off debt, it's a scam. Imposters will claim your social security numbers at risk, or your utility company will stop service due to late payments, or you won the lottery and only need to pay some upfront costs. They'll say the fastest way is to buy gift cards and share the numbers on the back. Anyone who tells you to pay a debt with a gift card is a scammer. More information on gift card scams at aarp.org/giftcards.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.